Thanks. Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. Am I clicking and moving this along at my pace, right? Okay. So I have nothing to disclose financially, except to the IRS. So the scope of the problem, I think what, I don't know how many of you know the actual numbers, at least what is thought to be the numbers anyway. Worldwide, we're talking about 44 million people, current 2013 that was, to projected in 2030 to be 76 million, and in 2050 to be 146 million people with cognitive dysfunction at a highly degenerative state. It's a serious problem. There's a lot of talk about genetics nowadays, and just to set this at rest quickly, there is a genetic connection, but the genetic connection is somewhat weak, and there is a positive genetic connection and a negative genetic connection. This is one of the genes, the APOE. There's three particular alleles that are responsible. The fourth allele is the one that's usually given the bad name, but it doesn't always manifest. So you can have Alzheimer's, not have the allele. You can have the allele, not have Alzheimer's. Since looking at this and putting this together, I saw the recent article of our newsletter from the APHA. Costs relative to dementia treatment and care have increased from $604 billion in 2010, this is worldwide, to $818 billion in 2015. I think that would put a nice dent in our budget and the deficit if we could find a way to reduce that. So Ben Franklin, as always, was probably right, except instead of an ounce of prevention and a pound of cure, I think maybe it's a couple million in prevention and billions in trying to cure. The diet, this is a big thing for everything, as the introduction stated, but what we're looking at here, the most literature is on a Mediterranean-type diet. So that's lots of vegetables, it's fish, a little bit of wine, a little vino, that kind of stuff. And if you're going to have game, you're going to have hopefully wild game. Dietary interventions, there's really a lot of literature on it, though. The level of literature varies. This is from a study that looks at all the other RCTs out there. The blue one on the left is from animals, and the tan one on the right is human studies. As you might expect, there's less human studies. For some reason, we're not allowed to cut up their brains and find out what happened. So, but what it does show, and this particular picture could take a whole lecture itself, but what it does show in animal studies, there's a lot of decreases, and the four factors that they're looking at, they're looking at calorie restriction, they're looking at intermittent fasting, they're looking at polyphenols, that's that wine, and we're looking at polyunsaturated fatty acids. So just using these four dietary factors, there's a lot of reduction in risk for AD, there's reduction in degenerative changes, there's an increase in brain-derived neurotrophic factor, increase in cerebral blood flow, a lot of things which are positive for preventive measures and a lot of things which we want to get rid of and make as a negative there. Exercise, again, a subject that's talked about all the time for everything. And I thought it was an interesting slide. It talks about four physiological factors in which exercise improves the patients or the participants in the study. Sleep quality is the first one. Second one is average resting heart rate. The sleep quality is incremented. The heart rate is decreased. Maximum oxygen uptake increased, as you might expect. Average daily calorie needs increased. So when you want to lose weight, that's a good thing. Life expectancy improved by 4 years. That's pretty cool. And sweat. A lot of people don't talk about sweat except how to prevent it. But actually, sweat is really important. The ability to sweat properly, to eliminate waste, to have body temperature regulation, all important, eventually for cognitive functioning as well. Meditation. Meditation is one of those subjects that's been written a lot about. Since the 60s, when all the gurus came in, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and the others, what we found is that meditation has a lot of physiological effects, positively, affecting blood pressure, affecting cholesterol, affecting mood. Stress reduction is a biggie. All of these things factor into whether or not your cognitive function is maintained over time. Sleep is an interesting one, too. We talk about sleep apnea, but really it's about the level of sleep that you get to and the healing phases that take place on the deeper levels as opposed to the superficial. So it's not just the number of hours, it's the quality of sleep. And sleep is one of those bidirectional things. So one of these studies is about the bidirectional nature, i.e., if you have cognitive dysfunction, it's hard to sleep. And if you don't get good sleep, you'll more likely end up with cognitive dysfunction. And that's a common thing that we're finding in all of these. Brain activities, I got a little exercise for you. So aside from doing Lumosity.com and doing Sudokus every day, do this. Take this with your hands, and I'll quickly switch into the peace sign. Some of you are old enough to remember this. Come on. Do this, peace sign. Now do it this way. Now switch each other with each other. How many of you actually did it? Anybody raise their hand? I mean, just did it. Just like you did here, boom, boom. Nobody, right? We know from neurological studies that multitasking isn't really true. We just are fast switchers. But we know that if we do these kind of activities, especially combining the physical and the mental, that we improve cognition, we improve neuroplasticity more rapidly. Social. Mama told me it was nice to be good and friendly with everybody, including the family. And Mama was always correct. I didn't always listen. But parenting, family, friends, relationships in general have a better curve towards maintaining your brain health. Education is an interesting thing here. If for no other reason, get a master's because it'll improve your chances of maintaining your cognition later in life. The probability of getting cognitive dysfunction late in life is increased considerably by not having education. So what's our role as healthcare providers? This slide and the next slide would be entire lectures on their own, but I'm going to summarize quickly. So in the middle part there's a metabolic and a miscellaneous section of risk factors. Risk factors is an important part of practitioner and especially a primary care practitioner's job. You'll notice the green thing on the right. So what this author did is put drugs and lifestyle changes in there. And that's a good thing because the box below it are the pathophysiological kind of changes which go into the neurodegeneration, which is that last step. However, I suggest you take that green box with lifestyle and move it up a level. Because in that miscellaneous category, for example, are head injuries, aluminum toxicity. Should we wait until the head injury is done and they've already poisoned themselves with aluminum? See, I got that thing again. Should we wait until it happens before we change their lifestyle? Or should we teach them when they're young to change the lifestyle? I submit that the latter is the right answer. Same thing here. There's a little bit more pathophysiological changes, calcium imbalances, abnormal protein accumulation. The last step towards that degenerative change, that brown pile on the bottom. But in that circle on the left are also the genetic things. So I didn't mean to demean genetics before. I meant to say that it's controllable. I meant to say through epigenetic modification, you can modulate the effects, express or inhibit the genetics. Other conditions. There's many other conditions which either result in cognitive dysfunction or can mimic it or provide it as a temporary thing. For example, drugs. So as a provider, and it's a role that it's in our scope and we can practice, we need to know what drugs they're taking. We need to know what other possible cardiovascular, hypoxic conditions, asthma, other things over periods of time which eventuate the kind of conditions that we saw, the pathophysiology, which results in cognitive dysfunction. Depression and dementia, bidirectional again. If you have a lot of depression, the odds are much higher you will end up with cognitive dysfunction. And if you have cognitive dysfunction, a lot of those people are depressed. So what do? Patient education. That's a biggie. I like that. Obesity, stress management, there's any number of things that you can do, all which relate to the cognitive function of the brain. And what you do is you do your talk, you explain it to people, and then you tie it up with whatever condition you want to do. It could be just cardiovascular. But we know cardiovascular, and we know that blood sugar handling factor into cognitive dysfunction. Social and political, here we are. That's us. So I am preaching to the choir. I suggest the choir go out and proselytize. Let's start preaching some other places. That's that education thing we talked about. And the ACA also, very interested in doing this kind of work. The research, the first article there I thought was interesting was a case study on upper cervical technique and Parkinson's disease. So Parkinson's disease is another one where cognitive dysfunction occurs. There's a second study is also a chiropractic one on mood disorders, migraine, headaches, and a couple other related conditions. We can do this research. The last one is a Finnish study and published in the Journal of Geriatrics, which talks about long-term lifestyle changes over the course of a lifetime. And all of these changes occur over the course of a lifetime. In that social one, one of the articles there was about breastfeeding and how it affects cognitive dysfunction even as early as the teen years. And most of us have had teenagers can vouch for that, right? Cognitive dysfunction, that's what we lay it on. So anyway, that's all I have to summarize, is that this is a complex problem and has multiple solutions. It's about patients making better choices and we as practitioners empowering them to make those choices. The article above, the central message of this article is that cognitive and social emotional function are intertwined across the life course, and we suggest fuse to form skills for life-supporting self-regulation, competence, and quality of life that persists into later life. Thank you.